Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. And FBI Most Wanted makes 3. 3 as in 3 hit multi-program franchise from Dick Wolf and crew, the other two being Law & Order and Chicago. Most Wanted and Mothership FBI now run back-to-back Tuesday nights on CBS. And Most Wanted's award-winning executive producer Renee Bolsinger joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Over at CBS All Access, a groundbreaking direction and drama presentation unfolds February 6th. Interrogation. We'll bring you the co-creators and overseers of this TV tale, Anders Wiedemann and John Mankiewicz, later this hour. Also ahead, where Kobe TV stands, HBCU Go, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Tom Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free audiobooks and a very unique 1-year offer when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A very good Monday afternoon to you, and welcome once again to the program All About Television. 43 degrees at the top of the hour, back in sort of Indian January, you might say. Great guests coming your way over the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. And we've got our chat room in business right now. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you connect others using Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Renee Bolsinger, executive producer of FBI Most Wanted on CBS, joins us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. The future of Brandy Studios, Kobe Bryant's motion pictures unit, is unclear at this hour. Bryant, the pro basketball superstar, was killed in a helicopter crash yesterday afternoon in the Los Angeles area, along with his daughter Gianna, the helicopter pilot, and 6 other people. Bryant was 41, Gianna 13. Gravity Studios produces Detail, the ESPN Plus series, with Bryant analyzing the performance of pro athletes. The venture earned Academy and Sports Emmy Awards 2 years ago for the animated short subject, Dear Basketball. Apple TV and Roku will launch HBSC Go this Saturday. It's a full-time programming service running series and coverage of events and culture historically black colleges and universities. Another such operation, HBCU Gateway, started last summer on bikes on various short smart TV sets and connected devices. Go was put together by former ESPN and BET executive Curtis Simons. Disclosure, I've known Curtis for a long time in his BET and ESPN executive days. And HBCU Go, which starts on Saturday, he will be with us next Monday as our lead guest right here on Tomorrow Televised. That's Curtis Simons of HBCU Go, which premieres February 1st, this Saturday, on Apple TV, Roku, maybe other smart TV connected devices and sets in the near future. He will be with us, Curtis Simons, Monday as our lead guest right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Televised. Before we get to our first guest, 2 quickies. More than 16.5 million people watched last night's Grammy Awards on CBS. A Kobe Bryant special on ABC attracted 2.5 million viewers. And HBO announced last hour that a Kobe Bryant retrospective will be included in the 20th anniversary season opener of Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel tomorrow night. This will be episode 274 of this award-winning program. And that is news notes for today. My first guest is one of the key people that made Law & Order get on the map and stay on the map on NBC for 2 decades, one of the longest-running series in television history. At the same time, he also developed Law & Order Criminal Intent, which ran for a full decade on NBC and USA Network. Along the way, he's won Emmy Awards, Peabody Awards, all sorts of awards for his Law & Order work. And now he's the executive producer of FBI Most Wanted, which pairs now Tuesday night at 10 o'clock, back-to-back with FBI, mothership of the newest Dick Wolf franchise on CBS. Kobe, welcome back to this program. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, Renee Bolsinger. Renee, welcome back in.
Thank you, Simon. Glad to be back.
And it's great to have you back. How have things been going with FBI Most Wanted in its first month?
How's it? Well, so far, so good. I'm pretty pragmatic, so live week to week. So, I always think, well, they haven't canceled us yet, so I guess we're doing okay.
Well, it seems to be pairing up very well with FBI, which premiered over a year ago on CBS. What makes Most Wanted tick? What did you want to do when you got the assignment from Dick Wolf to do this?
Well, you know, Dick and I had talked about the format that we wanted to do and, you know, borrow a little bit from Criminal Intent, but, you know, make it more of a show with momentum, forward momentum, a bit more of an action show. But I also wanted to do more of a personal show in terms of, you know, delving into the characters' personal stories, into the main characters, Jess LaCroix's family. And he has a very unique family situation. You know, his wife was a Native American. She was in the U.S. Army intel. She was killed in Afghanistan a couple of years ago. And now he has to raise his daughter, who's 11, and he's doing it with the help of his in-laws. And they live in a little farm in Long Island that he bought. And he also happens to work with his brother-in-law, who he went to the academy with and who introduced him to his future wife. And so, you know, most episodes are bookended with a scene with Jess and his family and his daughter as he tries to kind of rebuild his life after his wife's death. And the other part of it is, you know, we get to spend a lot of time with the bad guys. And, you know, I see this kind of a bit of an ode to the marginal people that I knew when I was living on the margins and, you know, outlaws and all of that. So, you know, they seep into some of our bad guys. So that's what kind of drew me in. You know, when I created the show and created these characters, this is what I wanted to you know, the various ingredients that I wanted to put into it.
As you were saying that, Renee, what came to mind was the FBI, the long-running show that Quinn Martin did for ABC in the 1960s and 70s. And when he started that program, he also wanted to do a lot about the private life, the off-duty life of Lou Erskine, played by Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. In fact, Lynn Loring played his daughter. And it looked like that was going to be the way to go, balancing the case that Erskine was involved with how he's doing with his family life. And then for some reason, which was never explained publicly or privately, Quinn Martin and his crew decided, we're not going to go that way. We're just going to do the straight case, no more family life, no more this or that. I don't know if you saw the FBI, at least those early episodes, but did that come into play at all? It sounds like you're doing what Quinn Martin could have done, let's say, had he decided to not drop that angle.
Right. Well, I didn't know about this angle. You know, I just knew that show as a very straightforward procedural. And, you know, I think they were doing it maybe with, you know, hand in glove with the FBI, and maybe kind of, you know, the J. Edgar Hoover's FBI got a little uncomfortable with all the personal stuff. I have no idea, but that's why I would speculate on that. But, I developed this show kind of independent of obviously, you know, the Quinn Martin show, which, as I said, you know, I just thought it was a straightforward procedural. And, you know, that's not what I wanted to do here.
And Jacob Hoover, by the way, was involved with that series. I think he refused the scripts, or at least
yeah.
had some of his underlings do so. So in your case, how do you
Yeah,
balance,
I can imagine
how do you balance...
probably wouldn't. I was going to say, I can imagine J. Edgar Hoover probably didn't want to get into the FBI's personal lives. It might get a little sticky.
Yeah. So how do you balance that? How do you balance having the main plot every week, you know, this undercover team going after the most wanted fugitive of that hour, with, you know, the ongoing story of the personal lives?
Well, it turned out to be pretty easy, because the people that Jeff works with, you know, his team is kind of a family, with Jeff being kind of the father figure or the older brother figure, and everyone else kind of falling in around him. So, you know, a lot of his personal stuff with his daughter seeps into, you know, the day-to-day of their investigation. You know, discussions with his brother-in-law, or even with the Cheryl Barnes character played by Roxy Stenberg, who's kind of a you know, a big sister to Jeff LaCroix. So, you know, it has found, you know, after a few episodes, kind of a very organic way to fall in. And, you know, and it quite naturally, usually at the end of the episode, when Jeff finishes the case, goes home, you know, there's a natural way to flow into his, you know, personal life.
We're speaking with Renee Balthaire, the award-winning writer-producer of Law & Order and Law & Order: Criminal Intent's latest work with Dick Wolf, the executive producer that's been doing so much in television with Law & Order. The Chicago franchise is now FBI. Is FBI Most Wanted? You can find it Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock on your local CBS station with FBI, the mothership, on the hour earlier. Renee joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Adler with you live from the web of New York. Good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for Renee, make the call, 646-652, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a big two-hour episode coming your way to wrap January up on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, speaking of East New Pacific. First of all, we'll have former Congressman J.C. Watts. On February 10th, he launched a project he has wanted to do for a long time, the Black News Channel, a 24-hour service of news information catering to African Americans and the rest of us as well. He's the chairman of that service. He will join us live as our lead guest. Then, for the brand-new Comedy Central hit, Awkwafina, is Nora from Queens, co-creator executive producer Teresa Zhao. Plus, in our second hour, the vice presidential program at INST, the network behind such programs as The Cowboy Way and other series, Craig Miller will be back. And we will have, finally, from the new Spectrum Originals video on demand series, Manhunt, Deadly Games, dealing with the Richard Jewell case, we'll have a great executive producer and writer, Andrew Sarofsky. That's all coming up on a special two-hour edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised to wrap up the first month of this new year and decade, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Renee, talk about Julie McMahon, who is your star, the leader of this squad. What had you and your crew cast him in that role, and what does he bring to the character that you create?
Well, I think he's the perfect CBS leading man. You know, if you look at the leading men who, you know, do Blue Bloods, who do NCIS, Mark Harmon, Julian is definitely in that category. But also, Julian has played in the past kind of somewhat darker characters, especially in Nip Tuck and his various incarnations on screen. So there's, you know, he's the ideal leading man in the sense you could believe him when he plays, you know, a good guy, but you also sense that maybe this guy has kind of a dark side. So, you know, and he's devilishly handsome and charming, and he's got these incredible eyes that everybody locks into. So all of that kind of, you know, led us to him. And once, you know, we met him in person, so, well, this is the guy.
And you have a very interesting actress also that we remember as a child from a Oscar-nominated film called Whale Rider, Keisha Castle Hughes. How is she as a grown-up actress?
Oh, Keisha Castle Hughes, she's great. You know, she's a real spark plug in the show as a character and also as a person. You know, she's like everybody's kid sister, but you know, she's out in the field. She can, you know, wield a gun and wield a computer with equal skill. She's got a, you know, quick wit and a kind of a smart mouth. And she has this, you know, terrific interplay with Kellan Lutz, who plays Ken Crosby. You know, definitely kind of a sibling relationship. You know, Keisha has been in Game of Thrones and a number of other shows. So she's a, like I said, a real spark plug.
In putting Most Wanted together, did you get any support from the FBI or from other organizations that do undercover units?
Yeah, Ian, nothing official. We have former FBI agents advising us. We have one in LA who ran the task force there, the Fugitive Task Force. So he advises the writers, and then on set we have a former FBI agent who, you know, makes sure when people hold a gun, it's pointing in the right direction, and all of that stuff. But no, there's no official link between us and the FBI.
In this series, how ripped from the headlines is it? And compared to what you did on Law & Order and Criminal Intent, what kind of headlines do you look for you and your writing team to develop scripts?
Yeah, well, even in the Law & Order, the rip from the headlines kind of got this rap that, oh, we're just taking, the story out of the newspaper. We never did that. We took the headline, and then we went in a completely different direction. Here, we have a whole backlog of most wanted cases going back to the 50s, and some of them, we get inspired by them. Maybe sometimes we combine two of these cases, make it something interesting. Probably of the first 16 episodes, maybe 8 or 9 were inspired by actual fugitives, who were on the most wanted. But we play with a very loose hand, and it's really, it's where these characters take us that sort of dictates where the story goes.
What's the most unusual case so far in this first group of episodes? What particular case really excited you about writing about it, or about dramatizing it?
Well, there was a case of a doctor who had become involved with a motorcycle gang and started dealing opioids through his medical practice. And as a character, that was kind of fascinating. We have one episode that's coming up, which follows two fugitives, a man and a young woman, who in real life carved a path of just mayhem and violence through the South and Midwest about 20 or 30 years ago. And then we're inspired by that case. And there was someone at CBS, an executive who had worked on Criminal Minds for 15 seasons. And she said that this episode was more disturbing than anything she'd ever worked with on Criminal Minds, which, I took as a compliment.
What's it like to reunite with Dick Wolf and do your show, another show that you've developed again? It seems that in following Dick's career and your career also, with Law & Order, but also the other Law & Order in Chicago shows, it seems that Dick has this habit that if, let's say, an executive producer leaves to do something else on their own, they're always welcome back. I read the credits, Born SVU, for example. You have Michael Chinookin came back, and Warren Leight, who had done SVU for a while, he's now back. It just seems that there is this environment that you, Dick, other people create where you always have a home there. You always have an opportunity to do work there, to develop programming there.
Well, we always have a home as long as there's something for us to do. I mean, Dick is, a very rational human being, probably the most rational Uber producer that I've had the opportunity to work with in my 30 years. What he does is he provides a canvas and then basically leaves you alone. So hey, here's sort of the outline of the show, fugitive task force, it's the most wanted, all those people you see on the posters in your post office. Make a show out of that. And basically, as long as you're not screwing up, Dick leaves you alone. And, that's not a common situation in television. And at the same time, he provides a lot of cover for, just by virtue of the, I guess you'd call it power or prestige that he's accumulated, that he provides, the writers and the showrunners with a lot of cover. So that's always very helpful. Dick and I have had a relationship over the last 30 years, all the shows you mentioned. And, you know, it's always been fruitful for both of us, and for me creatively, it's been, you know, very satisfying. So, why wouldn't you want to come back to that, you know, when you have the opportunity or the right project?
When Law & Order was about to start its 20th and turned out final year on NBC, there was a special party for press get-together with Dick and the crew and the cast. And I had a chance to ask Sam Waterston about the closing arguments that were a highlight of many Law & Order episodes. And he mentioned you in part because you wrote a lot of these arguments that he did. And I thought Waterston, you know, did a great job with those closing arguments. Whatever the case was, it was always riveting, and it seemed to be done like in one take. And I was wondering, what was your process when you wrote those specific episodes to write those closing arguments for somebody like Sam who could just deliver something like that so beautifully?
Yeah, well, you know, Michael Chernichan and I, you know, apart and together wrote some, you know, closing arguments that we thought were pretty strong. And, you know, I've written a few on my own. And the process was, you know, I read a lot. I would read, you know, famous speeches, you know, Lincoln, or you know, borrow phrases here and there. And so a lot of, you know, a lot goes into it. And, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of great orators. I had an uncle who was a politician up in Canada, who he was a minister of justice, and you know, I listened to him, and you know, I was always, you know, taking notes mentally, and also, you know, we just got a feel for Sam's cadence, the themes that, you know, that interested me, and you know, once you get to a closing argument, you know, you look at the case, you look at some specifics, and then you start to build your argument. And then you just, you know, sort of take off into, into oratory. So, yeah, I mean, that's the process. There's no formula for it, but, you know, certainly, you know, I've borrowed from speeches by Lyndon Johnson, who was a great orator, or certainly he had great speech writers. I've borrowed from Lincoln, you know, et cetera. And
you've
I borrowed from Raymond Chandler.
A lot of people have. He's one of the great authors. I watch Noir Alley on Turner Classic Movies, which has shown Big Sleep and a lot of other films that were inspired by him or adapted from his works. And he's highly thought of.
Yeah.
You've been involved in television for more than three decades. What do you think about this environment right now, where we are seeing so many avenues to put television shows on the air, so many now long-term production deals for various producers, writers, directors, whether they do it for a network like CBS, or they do it for Netflix, or they do it for Warner, a studio like Warner Brothers? What do you think as a writer-producer of this new, what I call, plentiful TV environment?
Well, I think it's, you know, to me, it's a land of opportunity, you know, on the one hand. On the other hand, it's like, you know, to me, it's like the, you know, I'm a hockey fan, so the NHL expansion, you know, maybe it expands too fast and you don't have enough good players to go around, at least now. So I think it's kind of a mixed bag, and, you know, some shows, yeah, they're great shows. I don't know how they're going to, you know, they can sustain financially or, you know, even creatively. But, you know, they make for, you know, really strong first seasons. So, you know, I'm kind of, you know, bullish about it. You know, I think it'll sort itself out.
Two other things I wanted to ask before you go. One is, I understand you had a pilot with Ava DuVernay, that she directed it. What was it like working with her?
It was really interesting. You know, she's she's a powerful voice, has a powerful point of view, and so do I. So yeah, we had our moments, and but also we had, you know, some very creative moments together. So, I wish her well, and I think her voice is a very important one, in the, not just in the television business, but just in society at large.
Yeah. And finally, Renee, how do you see a voice? How do you want to develop the voice of Most Wanted the rest of this year and seasons to come?
I obviously have my point of view, how I have a slightly skewed way of looking at things and a slightly skewed way of writing characters, so that comes out, but there's no plan here. it is what it is, and if you like the first four episodes, I think you'll like the next 12 episodes.
And the next episode of FBI Most Wanted is tomorrow night on your local CBS station, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, followed by the latest episode of The Mothership, FBI. That's FBI at 9, FBI Most Wanted at 10 on your local CBS station. Check out to where that CBS station is playing in your area. And for more details about the program online, you can go to CBS.com. That's CBS.com. Renee Bolstad, the executive producer of FBI Most Wanted, thank you so much for coming on. Great to have you back after a very long while. Congratulations to you and everybody involved for Most Wanted success, and hopefully it's the beginning of a great long run for you.
Thank you, Simon. And thanks for
having
me. You're welcome,
Renee. It's a pleasure. A pleasure. Anytime. You're always welcome back. Take care. Enjoy.
All right. Thank you. You may live to regret that, but okay. Thanks.
No way. Renee Bolser, executive producer of FBI Most Wanted, joining us live from Los Angeles. Once again, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on CBS. Clapper trivia question coming away in a moment, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're looking for a very unusual Western to listen to, how about this one, Inland by Tia Obrecht. You can catch it right now as part of your trial run for Audible.com. If you haven't heard about Audible Tom, you should. It's more than just a division of Amazon.com. It's a very unique enterprise which presents great, great audio entertainment. It's the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information, plus inspiration, too. And there's over 108,000 titles you can choose from at any time. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get 3 free audiobooks and a 1-month trial of the service. And if you take that trial and make it a year-long subscription, you can save $50 off the first year price. Oh, by the way, with your 3 free audiobooks, 2 of them will come from the growing collection of Audible Originals, everything from original productions to the best of Broadway, off-Broadway and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man shows. So, take the time right now and hear for yourself how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Just go to audibletrial.com/provide for all the details and sign up. Here comes our private trivia question of the week. If you're first with the correct answer, you'll win Identify Yourself, A Journey in Creative Courage by the creator of the popular USA Network late night series for 70 years, now its own smart TV service, Stuart Shapiro. And there's a second question involved. If you get that, we'll also throw in a terrific book, Gentleman Jack, The Real Ann Lister by Ann Chubba, based on the great HBO miniseries that appeared last summer and coming back with a new season this summer, with a foreword by Sally Rainwright, the series creator, main producer, and main writer-director. Here's the question. What 1950s Western television series was based on reporting from an Arizona newspaper? What 1950s Western television series was based on reporting from an Arizona newspaper? If you get that question, you get Identify Yourself. If you name the Arizona newspaper with your answer, you get both books. And, of course, we want you to get involved by emailing me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. You have the correct answer or answers. And first correct answer wins. And all you have to do is, as I said, simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you missed the question a moment ago, post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at Twitter, UBC Simon TWBT. And remember, when you give your answer, don't forget to enclose your name and your full name and the rest. So if you have the correct answer, you will get the prizes to you ASAP. And once again, post the question again tomorrow, if we don't get a winner by the end of today, on Facebook and on Twitter. So play in, make it happen. And of course, all the very best. When we come back, CBS All Access next week is going to be launching a very unusual experiment in how you watch a television program. You watch the first episode, and then the next eight, you can watch it any order you like, as long as you watch the finale, episode 10. The experiment is called Interrogation. You'll meet the two executive producers behind it. Anders Wiedemann from Sweden, John Mankiewicz from Los Angeles. They're both going to decide as we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio and www.speaker.com. Together, they attract more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for Jockey's Life. Check out this special tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific. That's Jockey's Life, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Don't forget, best of both services available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of today's Tomorrow Be Televised from Monday afternoon of January 2020. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have questions for our next guest, make the call 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you missed the news note from earlier in the program, next Monday, my lead guest will be Curtis Simons, the former BET and ESPN senior executive, who this Saturday is launching the new service on Apple TV and Roku, HBCU Go, a service showcasing culture and events involving historically black colleges and universities from around the nation. That's Curtis Simons from HBCU Go, Friday and Saturday on Apple TV, Roku, other smart TV devices and TV sets to come. He's with us on Monday, CBS New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. One of CBS All Access' first original shows this 2020 is a program that has a very unique going for it. It's called Interrogation. Here's the way it works. You watch the first episode of 10, you watch the last episode of 10, and in between this true crime drama, you watch the episodes from 2 to 9 in any order you want. Joining us live from Sweden, where it is, I believe, late night their time, is the co-creator, executive producer of the program, Anders Wiedemann. Anders, welcome in.
Thank you so much. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. And also joining us right here in the USA from Los Angeles is the other co-creator, executive producer, John Mankiewicz. Hello, John.
Hey, Simon. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you.
I think he said you watched the first and then the last and then the other ones. The last is... If that's right, if the last is the last, you watch
right.
The first.
The last is the last.
Yes.
The first is the first, and everything else in between is
your
the viewer's choice. And then let's start there with you. Why did you decide? You and John decide to frame this program this way. It's a very unusual effort in storytelling.
Well, actually, it turns out that this structure is more closely resembles how cold cases are solved in real life. Because when a cold case detective reopens a cold case, the first thing they do is throw out the previous linear interpretation of the story because clearly it turned out wrong. They were wrong about it. And instead, the cold case detective, they pick their own order, their own investigative path through the evidence in the case file, jumping back and forth in time. And we thought, wow, with the streaming platforms of today, we can actually present the show like that. So the season is one cold case. Every episode is one interrogation. And you pick the order you want to watch the episodes in, watch the interrogations in. And that actually shapes your perspective on what is the truth and what is lies. Because in this show, you can't trust anybody. Everybody lies. So you get to become the investigator in a cold case in that way.
Yeah, it's all about unreliable and reliable narrators and, you know, when you meet characters and the context of how you meet them. You know, is the cop just trying to, you know, nail this kid? And I think, you know, in a world... You know, where there's alternative facts now. In a murder case, the basic facts aren't in dispute. And I think, you know, people, if it's a murder case, no one's saying, well, maybe she's not dead. You know, if there's a murder, there's somebody dead. And we have, you know, this is a way to create your own narrative of the case the way a cold case detective would do it.
When you and Anders developed this series, given the environment that we're in, we just talked to Renee Bolzer about, which is this environment of plentiful TV where we're seeing all these unique styles of storytelling. We're saying now interactive television happened where people can choose their own direction of a character or a series as it develops. Was it an easy sell to get CBS All Access or somebody to try this on?
We had a couple people that wanted it. It's not like Bandersnatch, you know. I mean, it's organic to the concept of an investigation. Is, you know, the cold case detective throws out, as Andrew said, the original linear narrative because it was wrong, and doesn't want to be influenced by it. So they, by moving through episodes in the order in which you're most interested, you're replicating that process and creating your own narrative and hopefully, you know, arriving at some version of the truth.
Yeah, it isn't that complicated.
Sorry,
I was just going to continue saying that it isn't really that complicated. It sounds like it's a high-tech thing, but it's not. You can watch it linear in the order that is already put out by CBS All Access, starting February 6th, or you can choose your own investigative path. And it's not like Bandersnatch where you come to dead ends and you watch like 20 different versions of it. There are more than 40,000 different versions of this, but it's a much easier way through the story.
And explain the case. And I think it's based on an actual situation. And what have you and John decide, this is the case that we want to present. This is the case that we want to involve the viewer in?
We had a lot of conversations with consultants and from different police departments, and they basically told us about the most fascinating cases, cold cases, that they knew of. And there was one case that really stood out about Eric Fisher, a troubled young man. 1983, he was charged and convicted for the murder of his mother. He then spent over 20 years fighting for his freedom. And the question, of course, is if he's not guilty, and that might be a big if, then who is? So it was a perfect case spanning over 20 years with lots of different interviews over time, different interrogations to use as a background material that we've been heavily inspired by, I would say, rather than based on.
You know, it was the same criteria you would use for really any series, which is find a great story. I mean, this is a great, you know, this is a great Eric Fisher's journey is, however, whichever order you look at it, is a great story. And, you know,
we're speaking with the co-creators and executive producers of Interrogation. It's CBS All Access new series that premieres on February 5th, next week. And again, you watch the first episode, you watch episodes 2 to 9 in any order you want, and then you watch the end, which, by the way, the end episode is going to be released later on after the first 9 are available to you through smart TV sets and smart TV devices that take CBS All Access. Anders Wiedemann and John Mankiewicz are the co-creators and executive producers. Anders is live with us from Sweden, John from Los Angeles, and they're both with you right here this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Abbott with you from New York, 43 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for our guests? Don't be shy. Make the phone happen, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, we're back with you on Friday with a big two-hour episode to wrap up January. First up, we'll have the chairman of the brand new service, Black News Channel, who premieres on February 10th. Former Congressman J.C. Watt. He's our lead guest. Then, from the hit new Comedy Central series, Awkwafina is Nora from Queens, co-creator executive producer Teresa Zhao, and another internet radio exclusive. And in our second hour, we've got the vice president of ritual programming at INST, Craig Miller. And then, from the new miniseries on Spectrum Originals, video on demand on cable systems around the country, next month, Manhunt, Deadly Games, creator executive producer and headliner Andrew Sarofsky. All with you Friday, 3 degrees New Pacific. It's a blockbuster 2 hours you do not want to miss right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So let's talk about the cast for Interrogation. You have some very heavy-duty actors involved in this.
Yeah, I mean, we have, Peter Sarsgaard, who plays Detective Russell, who is, you know, such a good actor. I don't even know how to talk about how good he is. he brought, you know, you write a role and you hear it in your head, and Anders, I think, would agree with me. I mean, he brought something to it that actually, you know, never occurred to us, this kind of quietness and determination that, and sort of unlimited, I mean, levels of nuance in the performance that, you know, as we were shooting, you know, informed the writing. You know, he brought the character up like five or six different levels. We had Kyle Gallner, who's our who plays Eric from age 17 to 40 something. I mean, just saying, just that is an achievement. But he, you know, he more than holds his own with Peter. I mean, if you, I don't know if you guys, this is outside the world of TV, but Kyle's just in a movie that that played at Sundance, and he's like, you know, the tomorrow's star. And we knew that, I think we knew that before. I mean, he just, he's an amazing actor. Also brought a number of levels to it. You know, Vincent D'Onofrio, I think you guys all know how great he is. David Strathairn, who plays Eric's father. Just stunning. I mean, if there wasn't a weak part in any of the casting, I can't think of. I mean, it was just for writers, it was just a dream to have these people.
I'm That's curious about happened. Vincent D'Onofrio because he was, of course, formerly the star of Law and Order: Criminal Intent, and one of the highlights of that series was the interrogations, which later got his Sherlock Holmes-type character to finally, you know, nab the suspect. Did he make any contribution at all to how the interrogations went, or some ideas about the different aspects of interrogation work?
Well, he certainly – he wasn't – it's a different character than he played on that show, but he certainly is – he is familiar with that world, and, you know, it seemed like every move he made was authentic. We had, you know, detective consultants on set who were very impressed with his work and didn't have to give him a lot of notes.
And
but
by the way,
David
Strathairn, I'm just saying, David Strathairn, who I saw in and Ed Murrow in Good Night and Good Luck, wonderful performance in that film. I believe he had an Oscar nomination for it, and of course the film did too. If you've never seen his work in that, as Ed Murrow, the great journalist, in that magnificent film, do see it. It's and also his other work too, in other films like Sneakers, a few other places. He's like a chameleon actor. Every time you see him, he always delivers a great performance.
We should also mention he's great. We should probably also mention some other. I mean, Ebon Moss Backcraft, as we have, and Cody Smith McPhee, Andre Royo, Ellen Humphrey. I mean, we got some real solid cast who all contributed. Answering your question, if Vince D'Onofrio contributed, they all did. They were very engaged. All of our actors in the show, in a real good way, that contributed to the overall scope of it.
Joanna Going, you know, who had to be, who plays Eric's mom, who had to be killed a number of times, was fantastic. All of the people sort of brought, you know, dimension to their roles. And, I mean, if you just listen to the list of names, I mean, these actors are, we felt we were so lucky to get them. And, it raised the level of the show in an amazing, awesome way.
And for each episode's interrogation, what was the challenge in terms of coming up with episode after episode that no matter which one the viewers pick, that it's engaging, it advances the story, it gets you to be thinking like which way you want to go. What kind of challenge was it for both of you, and if you had other writers as well, to structure the interrogations that no matter what the viewer picked, it was a great way to start.
Well, first of all of the episode had to be written like a pilot, because they could be number one, then number two that the audience pick. So they had to be self-contained and had to pull the audience in. And then also, since it wasn't written in a linear order and you're allowed to jump around as you wish, there are certain structural aspects that is not doable anymore. For instance, you can't do setups and payoffs, which is a thing that writers love and need to do. Instead, what we were looking for were things like striking contrasts, lies, contradictive things. Like, you watch one episode and you see Detective Russell. You see him as happily married. He's living in a nice house. And then you switch on the next episode and you see that he's trying to pick up this girl in a bar. And you go, well, what is he doing? Is he trying to be unfaithful? And then it turns out that he's living by himself in a shitty apartment and he's divorced. And then you go, as an audience, what happened? And then you start to become the detective, not only in the overall question of if Eric Fisher is guilty or not. You also become the detective into the personal, private stories of these characters.
And
depending
how much
on which
does
order
affect,
you watch...
Yeah. Sorry, Andrew.
Yeah, and depending which order you watch the show, you come to different conclusions, or it affects your perception on the truth. And of course, as John was about to say, how much of this personal life actually affected the main plot line, which is the criminal drama?
Yeah, how much are personal agendas involved in? You know, there's the big agenda of truth and justice in the justice system. You know, they're trying to find the truth, but is, you know, there Vincent D'Onofrio's character is an IA investigator. How much of his conviction in, you know, believing Eric's story, if he does, is involved in, well, does he's a sergeant, does he want to be a lieutenant, you know, does he want to get, you know, Detective Russell, you know, for personal reasons, you know, dimensionalizing these characters gives them, you know, gives you more information about how reliable or unreliable they, you know, what they're saying is, and the viewers can make that judgment on their own.
So it's
John,
one
how do
way
you
to
and
break
Anders,
the show.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Then I had a question about
the one way to see the show is because you get to get inside the heads of these characters when they tell you what happened that day when Mary Fisher was murdered. They tell their story, and you, as an audience, get to see what they're telling us in a visual, cinematic way. But you don't know if they're telling the truth or not. So in that way, this show is sort of like a modern 21st century Rashomon over 10 hours.
Yeah, in each episode.
How did you two get connected? Because both of you have very interesting backgrounds. John, you did, speaking of groundbreaking shows, House of Cards, the first major hit for Netflix, which included the idea of the main character, Kevin Spacey's character, Frank Underwood, talking to the audience, the fourth wall breaking down. You did Box mm-hmm. also, great long-running series for Amazon. And Anders, you've done interesting projects on your own. How did you two come together?
Online. We met through a gentleman named Henrik Bastin, who produces Bosch, and knows and is a friend of Henrik's. Introduced us, and we started working together on this. Anders had this out-of-order idea, and I was drawn in and really loved it and loved working with him. And we developed it.
I had this idea for a while that I wanted to do an out-of-order, choose-your-own-order story, and then the only way and only place that it could be done is in the U.S. with the big streaming networks, because those reach the biggest audience. And right now, Netflix and CBS All Access and Amazon, they're taking over the world. So you want to be where Rome is.
Yeah.
And luckily, I met John on the way.
By the way, we have somebody in our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Welcome aboard. You have a question or comment for our guest, put in the room or make the call, 646-652-2906. Someone else that both of you are working with on this series is someone whose work I've admired both as a cinematographer and as a director of episodic television. That's Ernest Dickinson, who, of course, started his career as Spike Lee's cinematographer on his classic movies, and then he was the original cinematographer on Law & Order. Yes, we have a Law & Order theme running through this whole hour
That's
today.
Right.
But also, he has really proven himself as a great episodic director on all sorts of shows, including The Walking Dead. And now he is doing a bunch of your episodes. What's it been like working with him?
Ernest was fantastic. He's, you know, obviously it's a complicated show, and we had to write, you know, as you sort of referred to, you know, it's, we had a writer's room. We had, you know, we didn't want to shoot this until we knew we had all 10 episodes in shape. And since each one had to be a pilot that would and resonate with each other, and, you know, there was a lot of material, and we decided that it should be optimally, you know, one director, and because that's impossible to do, we hired Ernest to do 6, and Ernest brought on Patrick Cady to do the other 4, but whoever was doing it, and Ernest really rose to the occasion, had to assimilate all this information that bounces back and forth between episodes and informs each, you know, other episodes. You know, it's not like you can't just take, oh, here's episode 3, I'm going to plan this one and shoot it. You have to know what's going on in all the other ones, too. And, you know, we're jumping back and forth in time, and there's, you know, makeup and costume issues, and Ernest was the guy. He was fantastic.
And Stanley Dickinson also recently did Also, Ernest Dickinson recently did Godfather of Harlem, critically acclaimed show for Epix that's going back into production for a second season, produced in Harlem, by the way. And for those of you who remember a series called Rectify on Sundance TV, one of the most brilliant shows, by the way, TV has done in the last 15, 20 years. He was one of the key directors on that series, which if you've never seen it, find a way to see it. It's one of the really great, sensational shows. Ray McAnally, I hope one of these days he comes back to television. He's an absolutely brilliant writer, and his work and the work of everybody in that cast and crew was something sensational, one of the great high watermarks of recent television history. Do any of you see this kind of storytelling in this plentiful TV era, and also this interactive TV era, where people now can use their voice, their remote control on some programming to choose which way a character goes or which way an episode goes? Or in this case, even though it's not interactive TV in a technical sense, it's choosing order of what they see. Do you see this format being adopted for other forms of television, whether genre, comedy, drama, or do you think it's just going to be in this kind of interrogation atmosphere?
I believe after the first news came out about interrogation, there's been another 2 or 3 shows coming up with sort of similar concept, and I do believe that this is a new way to tell stories, a new structural way to tell stories, and I think it's going to probably stick around for a while. And I would love to see different genres tried out in the same genre.
Yeah.
What happens if you do a love story like this? You know, you jump around in a marriage when they're 17 and when they're 55.
Find out what went wrong. It also lends itself, I think I said earlier, you know, it turned out to be organic to the process of how real investigations go. So I think there has to be, I like to stay south of choose your own story. You know, I think the story is the story, and you have to, I was kind of frustrated a little bit by, although I admired it, Bandersnatch. I don't want to be making those kind of choices every 5 minutes with my remote control, because sometimes my remote control doesn't work.
No, it's not interactive storytelling. I would say it's engaging storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
that you're always putting the dots together.
Getting the audience to lean in a little is always a good idea, and I think true crime really is the great arena for that. There are probably other ones too.
We'll find out.
Well, we'll let the audience decide whether this kind of storytelling is going to be something that will be a major part of television's future. We will see, and a lot of people will start seeing, starting next Thursday, February 5th, with the premiere of Interrogation. It's available on CBS All Access, which is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV lights, and also through many CBS television stations around the country. Check your local listings for how you can get Interrogation, which starts on Thursday, February 6th. And for more details online, go to www.cbs.com/all access. That's cbs.com/all access. Interrogation, great cast, and a very exciting new development in television, all beginning next Thursday, February 6th, on CBS All Access. Anders Wiedemann, John Mankiewicz, thank you both very much for coming on. Anders, thank you, Anders, thank you very much for coming on from Sweden, where I know it's late night your time. It's been a pleasure to have you both on. Good luck with the series. Hopefully a great long run, and maybe, just maybe, we do have a brand new dimension in television that both of you are creating for people.
Thank you so much, Simon.
Thank you for being on.
It was great, great talking
thank
to you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Anders and John. Take care. All the greatest.
You too. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Anders Wiedemann and John Mankiewicz joining us live from Sweden and Los Angeles, respectively, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And before we leave you today, one final thought about the Grammy Awards last night on CBS. It was very moving for all sorts of reasons. Obviously, the death of Kobe Bryant earlier yesterday. But in the end, also, should we point something out that I think may get lost in the shuffle, but I hope it doesn't. It was the final Grammy Awards for one of the great producers in musical television, Ken Ehrlich. He started his career on public television, creating at WTW Chicago the brilliant series Soundstage, and for the last few decades, he has been the really master force behind the Grammy Awards and why it is one of the best award shows on television and one of the best annual music specials on television. Ken, congratulations on last night. It hit the spot, and it didn't do a swan song in musical television. It was a great swan song to have. All the very best to you. And I hope you will continue to give us great musical television moments like last night. And by the way, Alicia Keys was absolutely magnificent in the way she handled everything that took place on a very wild week, and particularly a very wild yesterday. She was absolute class, dignity, and integrity in what she did with the program. Remember, we're back with you Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, with a two-hour edition. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate, Candace Williams, Danny Tobes, Beach Art General Manager, Dave Sonberg, Executive Content Producer, and the co-founders of Blog Talk Radio, Anna Levy, and Bob Cherish. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Thanks to all of our guests. Have a great rest of your week. We are back on Friday with that blockbuster two-hour edition. Please join us, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to be now and then, please make it safe and make it great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.